Lincoln, get hold of tech and science. It's Lincoln Lights. And so we continue the exploration of the smorgasbord of science provided by Lincoln Lights with myths and science of sleep. And we're delighted to be able to share some moments on aforementioned myths and science of sleep with Professor Graham Law from the College of Social Science and the School of Health and Social Care at the University of Lincoln. Graham, a delight as ever. And we're both conscious.
Are we both conscious?
This is it. Are we astral? Are we astral traveling? Are we?
That's
simply
a very interesting question. Are we in a simulation? One of multiple simulations? I don't know.
And this is part and parcel of that whole notion. As we've said, we hear tales such as Mrs. Thatcher. She never managed to have any. She 2 hours sleep, 3 hours sleep. That's all. Mm. What happened to Mrs. Thatcher, I have to say. But in terms of all of those aspects, sleep is something that, a bit like death and taxes, we will experience as being human beings.
That's right. Death and taxes. So we all definitely experience sleep most days. Most people sleep most days for, actually, on average, 7.5 hours is the average reported, self-reported sleep time for people in the UK and in the US and in Canada and in Australia. So westernised civilisations, Northern Europeans, we sleep for 7.5 hours. So Margaret Thatcher was renowned for sleeping 4 hours, apparently. I think the best reports are weekdays, she probably did have shortened sleep. However, weekends, she caught up with her sleep debt, which is quite normal.
And of course, added to that, we've got the whole notion of deep sleep, REM sleep, alpha rhythms, the right kind of sleep. The suggestion that actually frequent cat naps during the day is actually better than a kind of long indoors. Too much sleep. Are all these just myths that have kind of just grown up from that point of view?
You've just touched on about 7 or 8 different myths in one or two sentences.
Exactly.
And let's think. You said cat naps. Okay. Socially, napping is seen as a thing that lazy people do or old people do. There's no doubt that's a set of myths. And
won't start talking about Spanish siestas.
Well, so in Northern Europe, there's no doubt that we see napping as being quite a negative. In fact, I was talking to a woman last week about napping, and she said, "Oh, I can't nap." What she said was, she said, "Oh, I find napping really weird, just lying there." And I said, "That's not napping. That's lying. If you want to nap, you need to go to sleep." And she couldn't believe that people actually did fall asleep for a nap. And there are 4 different types of napping, where you either basically you'll plan your nap or you're forced to nap because you're so tired. And there is some evidence that a planned nap every day isn't harmful. However, there is also evidence that suggests that people who extend the amount of sleep they have in a daytime through napping might be having an underlying illness. They might be unwell for other reasons, and so there's associations with a shorter life expectancy, for example. But I'm a strong advocate for a nap when you need one. There's something called, have you ever heard of the coffee nap? So the coffee nap is, and this is becoming a bit more popular, so the idea is you're feeling tired, you might have a post-dinner dip, circadian dip it's called, and you might think, right, I'm going to have a nap. If you then have a double espresso first, then lie down, it takes about 20 minutes for coffee to get into your bloodstream properly. So you've got a 20-minute window where you can take a nap. So have a coffee, go to sleep. After a good nap is about 15-20 minutes long. Wake up, then not only will you feel refreshed from having your nap, you'll also feel buzzing from having had a double espresso 20 minutes before, and that's a coffee nap. And there's a group of people who think this is a good thing.
Extraordinary. I mean, again, we're into that whole notion of where the meditation comes into play, how we kind of improve our wellness, and how, in essence, we've used the term before in previous elements and interviews, that sometimes, a bit like computers, need to switch off, start over again. Sleeping is part of the human organic experience of processing information and ensuring that we don't simply suffer from information overload.
Yeah. So, if you ask a child why you sleep, they'll say it's to rest and recover. Now, the truth is, you use about the same amount of energy whilst asleep as you do whilst watching television. So, why in an evolution, why would a human being be programmed to shut their eyes and go into a state where you can't react if you're being attacked by a tiger or something? It just makes no sense. In an evolutionary way, it makes no sense. That there must be more to it than just resting. And it's not about resting muscles or conserving energy or conserving heat. None of these really work very well in terms of why you sleep. It seems that you sleep because your brain is really quite active. It's doing things, and there's very clear patterns of brain activity whilst you're asleep. And one of the important components of your sleep is that you're processing memories, that you're laying down the short-term memories into the long-term memory bank. And there's no doubt that that seems to be a very, very important role. It might be also that you're flushing out the metabolic slurry from the day because you're processing, but you're also taking there's a whole set of chemicals that are in your brain from a day of activity that you need to flush out. I don't like using the word toxins because they're not toxins, you produce them yourself, but it is a good pattern for your brain where you, in the evenings at night, you flush out this waste products.
And by the time we're three, apparently we've slept for at least 10,000 hours, which means we should all be experts on sleep.
Well, yeah, by the time you're three, you've probably slept for about 14,000 hours. And if you were the Beatles, you have practiced your guitar for 10,000 hours. And if you're Bill Gates, you've practiced programming for 10,000 hours and you become an expert.
Instant expert.
We are therefore experts at sleep. Yeah.
So let's move on to this particular Lincoln Lights event, 2017, of course, from this perspective. What can the attendees to Myths and Science of Sleep with your good self, Professor Graham Law, what can they anticipate or expect? Will it simply be a case of just bring your own duvet?
Well, I hope not. The plan is that you don't sleep whilst I'm talking, but you, of course you could, and I suppose it might be a win-win from that perspective. I think anybody attending should expect to hear about what people think about sleeping. We all have a whole mythology to do with sleeping, and I'm not going to tell you what these are because I want people to tell me what they think mythologies are. But in the work I've been doing, I'm now up to 55 myths recorded that people have told me about sleep. And so what we'll do is we'll allow people to tell me what things they think they know about sleep, and then we'll discuss that, because there's a whole science an evidence base for all of these things, and most of them are not true. Some of them have kernels of truth that might be useful, some of them are beneficial, some of them are just plain harmful.
It's going to be fascinating. How did you follow, was it a particular sort of time where you thought, I want to follow sleep, just from your own particular perspective, you know, within the medical sciences, it's such an important thing, sleep, for actually healthy and healing us. Yes. Was it something you'd always sort of felt, sleep is for me?
No. So 8 years ago, I up until then, I'd been working on general well-being, of course, and you're looking at things like lifestyle factors, smoking, diet, exercise, the usual sort of patterns these are the things you look at. And you know, it was interesting. And then about 8 years ago, I was approached by somebody who we were working on something else. And she just mentioned in passing that she'd been working on what are called clock genes. And clock genes are, they seem to be one way that the cells in your body actually operate over a 24-hour period. And we were talking about that, and we got to discussing that we could actually look at sleep, and we realised that it is not a well-explored area of research at all. It's, in fact, it's been a completely ignored area of research for a long time, especially in clinical medicine. So we decided to start looking at that. And whilst when I then would talk to people in socially in a cafe or in a, at a party, it was so clear people were so interested in sleep. They would immediately say, "That's really interesting, Graham." And then they would tell me, "I only had 1 hour sleep last night," or, "Oh my word, my husband snores so badly, they wake me up all night." So there are all these stories about people's sleep. And I realised there was a real public interest in sleep as a thing. And so we started working on it. And of course, to really justify my the money that goes into the research, I need to really show health effects or health benefits of sleep. So at the moment, I'm working on diabetes and sleep, which has some very clear links. But really, it's been since then I've been working on sleep.